Hello, Vet Vaulters.
Hey, that's my line. I'll do the intro.
Okay, but before you go off on a monologue, shall we tell them about the news?
What, about the conference?
Yeah, man, the conference.
Which one? The Vet Vault Live? I've been telling them about that.
No, never mind. I'll just tell them, man. So Hubert and I were excited because we're coming to hang out live with you in Sydney on the 26th and 27th of October, which is like, I don't know, a couple of weeks away next month. We are coming to the Vet Expo in Sydney. Now, it took me a bit of time to figure out what the Vet Expo is all about because it's not your normal lecture all day, get plastered at night with a little bit of networking on the side kind of conference. So here's what I've figured out. Here's the official line. The Vet Expo brings the entire veterinary, animal health, and pet care worlds together. I see this as a meeting of ideas. And when ideas meet, they fall in love and make lots of cool little baby ideas that grow up and make massive ideas that will, in time, move our profession forward. We're talking 2,000 attendees, over 100 major vet and pet product suppliers, as well as some of the most innovative startup companies in the vet space.
So what does that all look like? Punchy and straight to the point 20-minute presentations by some of the most innovative minds in Vetland. In between presentations, you can walk around the busy expo floor and check out the new products and services that are out there to support your career and your business. Oh, and competitions. Fact, I've won something at almost every conference I've ever attended. And freebies. Oh, we love the freebies. My kids always get so excited when I attend any vet events. Day one of Vet Expo ends with a freaking boat cruise. Gerardo, I'm picturing you and me, Titanic style, on the front of the ship as we sail through Sydney Harbour. In fact, here's an event idea. Maybe it can be a prize. If you come to our stall, Gerardo will take a Titanic style selfie with you on the front of the boat, and then we'll see how many Titanic selfies with Dr. G we can get on Vetstagram. But here's what we are really excited about. We have a kick-ass space at the Trade Center where we're going to set up camp with all of our recording equipment and accost as many of the amazing speakers as we can to create a whole lot of content for the podcast live and in person. We're also going to try our first ever live broadcast where the live recording will go out to Vet Vaulters across the world, raw and unedited, with the opportunity for questions and even audience participation. We'd love it if you join us on or off air. So come and make Vet Vault history with us or watch us crash and burn in public. Either way, it'll be entertaining. We've also got some cool swag and special offers to share with you guys, and we'd love to meet you. So come and find us right near the cafe. To make sure that we have a total Vet Vault listener takeover at the event, we have a special offer for you from the team at the Vet Expo. Use Vet Vault 70, that's all capitals, Vet Vault 70, when you check out, and your tickets for the 2 days will be $90 or $105 if you want to join onto the boat cruise. That is 70% off the standard pricing, so get your ass into gear and come and see us there.
Okay, now you can have your monologue.
Thanks, G. I've worked in some places where if you had to use the words mother and practice in combination with any F word, you'd be saying a sentence that my mother definitely wouldn't approve of. But our guest for today is changing that. Actually, scrap that. She's managed to change that. Dr. Jocelyn Birch Baker's sentence would go, "This is a mother-friendly practice." Here's the reality. Things are changing. In my parents' generation, and to be honest, for the first part of the careers of me and my generation, work was work. It had its constraints and limitations, and if you had responsibilities and interests that clashed seriously with those constraints, be it leisure, personal choice, other career interests, or even just kids, well, then maybe the working world just wasn't for you. My dad, for example, who was a doctor, had his work commitments, and they were inflexible and inarguable. Work full-time or don't work. Those were the choices. But not today. This generation, and I think my generation, which is that weird little group stuck in between Gen X and the millennials, are a part of this. We just aren't happy with this arrangement. The people who make up the heart of vet practices today, or any businesses really, don't necessarily want to make that binary choice. Why can't I be someone with a career and be an involved parent, or a committed athlete, or be involved in something else that gives me joy? But here's where things get tricky, because some things haven't changed all that much. My mom was also a doctor, but cultural norms dictated that she was also mom, the primary carer. She had to do the exhausting dance of keeping the bosses at work happy and eventually becoming the boss herself while keeping the little bosses, that's me and my brothers, happy, fed, and nurtured. Sound familiar? Well, I say things haven't changed, but that's not entirely true. Back to Jocelyn and her practice. Owners and managers and definitely recruiters are waking up to the fact that if we don't create space for a workforce that has different needs to the workforce of 2 decades ago, that they simply won't have a workforce. And I'm very happy to say that I hear conversations amongst the decision makers, and for the most part, most of them are totally supportive of this change, to a large degree because they are a part of this workforce who wants to see a different way of doing things. But it's where the rubber hits the road where things get tricky. How do we change the way of doing things the way that they've been done for decades? How do we gel the needs of our talent pool with the needs of our clients, which are many, and the needs of our businesses? Dr. Jocelyn Birchbaker has walked this path, is walking this path, from employee mom to employer of moms, and now champion of the cause of creating veterinary workplaces that fit around employees rather than ramming them into the mold of what you think your practice should look like. Join us in this conversation as we explore how. Jocelyn is a practice owner and the founder of Smooth Operating Vets, which is a consulting service that helps practices with the practicalities of creating mom-friendly workplaces, or dad-friendly for that matter, thank you very much. Jocelyn shares about the experiences that shape the way she thinks about work, about how she approaches these challenges, and what she's learned along the way that has shaped the way that she thinks and leads. We talk about bad decisions, hard lessons, respect over competitiveness, living your values, finding that line between compromise and self-care, motherhood and practice, returning to practice after an extended break, and a better way to practice. And, of course, much, much more. Please enjoy Dr. Jocelyn Birchbaker. I'm Hubert Hemstra.
I'm Gerardo Poli.
And this is The Vet Vault. Welcome to The Vet Vault.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Hello, G. G's on the line today.
Oh, he's on the line. He turns up.
From time to time.
I'm always here, just sometimes I don't speak.
That's not possible. Jocelyn, should we start with, let's jump in informal. Let's start with bad decisions, good stories. Bad decisions lead to good stories, or can lead to good stories. Have you got an example that fits with that for us?
Yeah, it didn't feel like a bad decision at the time. I trundled off and got married and kind of stopped my career and became a wife. And then I kind of realized, well, I was really not wife material. And so that didn't go very well. I married a fellow and we went out. He's on a cattle station. And I learned so much. I just learned so much. And I really learned how to be quite strong and independent and do things. And, like, you know, we'd be mustering for days. And it was great because we'd be mustering and we'd just pull up the cattle and just wait while they settled, or put them in a holding yard and then get our quart pots and our lunch out and start up a fire and just sit there and no one would say anything. So it was lovely and peaceful and quiet, and the cattle were just snuffling around. And then all of a sudden they'd get up and we'd go and take them to the yards. And this would happen for, you know, a couple of days, and then you do it again next week. And it was really such an amazing lifestyle. And I was driving trucks and just doing stuff. And I really learned from that, if it's to be, it's up to me, because you did for yourself, basically. You had to get stuff done if you needed to get stuff done. Yeah, and even in town, like, we had a little town next to us called Middlemount, and if you wanted to set up a new club or something, you could just go and do it. Like, oh, let's have a Zonta club. Oh, okay, I'll be president. And then, oh, let's have a beef breeding club. Okay, I'll do that. Like, it was really cool. So opportunities abound. It was really great. It was really great. And I had two children and came back.
When was that? Were you a vet then, or was that before vet or after vet? Or
I graduated in 83, probably before you two were born, yeah?
And no, come on.
And I got married in 85. It was really, really hard to get work during that time too. I ended up well, we called it the dole then, like on Centrelink for a few months. That was devastating after 5 years of uni and at honours and couldn't get a job. Like it was pretty discouraging. Yeah. And,
what, seriously, there were just no vet jobs going?
No.
Well, fast forward 20-something years, here we are.
And I was in Rockhampton, like, you know, who comes to Rockhampton for a job? My family's here. So, yeah, it was really quite disconcerting.
So you qualified and then didn't work as a vet initially and then did the mustering thing?
No, I did work. I did get a job. I came down to Brisbane and worked down there for a while and then came back up here and worked for a fellow up here doing mixed practice. And, yeah, like, it was a bit tough. Like, we were on call every second day. We took turns. There's only two of us. And there were no mobile phones and no computers. Yeah, it was just different. And it was good. I learned a lot. Yeah.
And then you went mustering.
Yeah.
After that,
yeah,
you took a
yeah,
break.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was out there for probably 13 years. And then
wow.
When I was there, I got involved with Meat and Livestock Australia and the Beef Week and the government. So I worked on boards and committees and Emerald Ag College Board, just stuff like that. So just broadened my outlook and what I could do.
So if you said you needed mustering for, we also have international listeners. So what is mustering? What does it mean in practical terms?
Oh, yeah. Well, out on a cattle station, like you have a string of horses and one of the lads would go out and on the motorbike and bring them into the yard. And then we'd have our breakfast and trundle up to the yard and catch a horse and either saddle up and the few of us would ride out from there down to the closer paddocks. Otherwise, we'd just pop them in the truck and truck them down the bottom end. So the place was, I forget how big it was, but I know one of the paddocks was 10,000 acres. So we actually did that in stages, like you'd do one end of it and put them in the yard, you know, brand your calves, wean, whatever you're going to do, and then let them out. And then we'd go to the other end of the paddock and muster them in. But, yeah, it was really calm. And I learned so much. These people I was with were incredible horse people and incredible cattle people. They were very in tune with the land and the cattle and the horses. It was great to learn from them. And then I did a bit of preg testing and stuff around the area. And that, again, was a great because you'd go to another cattle station and they'd have, you know, high-level Brahmins or something. And you go, okay, we'll just wait. We'll just let them make a decision if they're going to go into that race or not. Like, you don't hurry them. It was different. Yeah. And the dogs, we had dogs. Oh, and they were grand. Yeah, just working with the dogs, that was fun. And I can remember one time I took Gizmo, my dog, and my daughter Cassandra out. Like Cassandra would have been about 5 or 6. So we took these wieners back out. And they were pretty steady. They were fine. So I sent Cassandra out in the lead. And so she's on a little grey pony just at the front there. And she must have opened the gate or maybe I opened the gate. Anyway, and the dog was just wandering about. Then we put the wieners into the swan water and I'm saying, oh, come back now, come back. So she and a pony just walked right through the middle of all these wieners. And I'm going, what are you doing? You go around. And she said, oh, and she just kept coming to me. And I said, what'd you do? You walked right through the middle of the wieners. And they were saddled, so they were fine. And she said, oh, mummy, I thought you were talking to the dogs. And I thought, oh, whoops. Because you tell the dogs to go around, you know. So, poor little wife. But anyway, we got by. We had so much fun. Yeah.
Wow.
What an experience. So it's like in the movies, like the romantic vision that you get.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Driving in Australia.
Yeah, that's what you thought, but it wasn't. It was hot, that's dry, dusty and cold.
We had drought.
Yeah, there was no Hugh Jackman showering under a bucket.
No. No,
they just had picturesque streams and creeks.
Yeah,
and
dry.
Willows.
Yeah, oh, we had those days. It was really good, yeah. But the cottage, like one-bedroom cottage, no power. We had a welded generator there and it was a bit hard for me to, like I wasn't quite strong enough to get it going every time. So sometimes I just wait in the dark for someone to come home put the power on and no phone, like no phone there. It was good. It was different. It won't happen again. Yeah.
I listen to this and I just go, oh, we, myself, present company included, are so soft.
I was good with cattle, I think, until like a 1,200-kilo bull busted out of the crush as we were trying to collect semen from it, and it turned around and faced us. And then I was there with my massive Akubra hat, which I thought was super sexy, and I was in fifth year. And then I looked around everywhere else, and then the lecturer and half the students were behind the car. Yeah. The other half of the students were behind the crush, and it was just me facing off this ball about 3 meters away. Yeah. And I was terrified. I didn't know what to do. And I just went, rah, and it ran away. And I was like, oh my God, I almost just died.
People go, Gerard, are you so brave? You go, no, I was just too stupid to run.
I was just too stupid to run fast. It was slow-mo, and I was like, wow, this is incredibly scary.
You've experienced a bit of stuff, don't you, during your life? And then you respond, react, whatever you do, and learn and move on. Yeah.
So there's a lot in that, isn't there? Are there major things that you think you took away from that experience that you've taken to where you are now? You've achieved a lot. Did you learn things there that you didn't know before that you apply in your everyday life?
Yeah, I think so. I think I learned a lot of self-reliance because we just didn't have food on tap. We didn't have phones. We just didn't have everyday stuff. And I really work with that. If it is to be, it's up to me. And I think my daughters have learned that as well. They sort of have this thing with, she said she would and then she did. So they know that they need to just, you know, run their own lives, learn to live their life the way they want and run their lives, and not, you know, you got to compromise and you got to work with other people, but you don't have to give up too much of yourself to do that. And I think bringing up my children has taught me a lot of leadership skills with my people at work. You encourage your children and you watch them and you watch them make mistakes and they come to you and they want you to fix it all and you go, yeah, I can help you there, but, you know, you have to kind of do it yourself as well. And all that, they're so precious to you. Your children are so precious to you. You don't want anything to go wrong with them, but you know you have to teach them and help them be strong and just be themselves as well. Like if they do something that you think, oh, I wish I wouldn't have done that, you know that you're there for them if it doesn't work out, and it'll probably work out because I haven't got the strength to do something that they're going to do doesn't mean that they don't. They do. And that's the same with our staff. Like, they have amazing gifts they bring to our clinic. And I go, oh, my goodness, you can do that. Like, you can do that surgery. I couldn't do that surgery. Or working up cases. Like, oh, my goodness, these young ones, they are so smart. They just know stuff I don't know. I just don't know it anymore. You know, we didn't learn it at uni because it didn't exist. So it's quite an effort to keep your skills, like keep learning. And they just amaze me constantly with what they can do and how dedicated they are. They so want to save animals. It just comes down to that.
You said something there, which maybe it came from your time away or just over, I don't know, like what you shared there was vulnerability, right? And I struggled with this when new grads or like, okay, so I went through a phase where I felt threatened by people with new knowledge for a pretty long period of time. And personally, I found that after a period of time quite constraining and also quite tiring in a way that I felt like as if I had to be the pinnacle of knowledge in the hospital. And then ultimately it's impossible. And then you get to this point of allowing people to contribute and share with you. And then you acknowledge the knowledge that they know that you don't. But what was it for you? Like, do you remember a point where you just go, whoa, these guys have something they can contribute to me and allowing that in? Because I would find that a lot of senior vets and practice owners kind of might struggle with that.
I think it probably comes right back to when we came back to Rockhampton and I hadn't practiced for 10 years, just a little locum here and there. I've just felt so far behind. I just didn't know something, stuff I had to catch up anyway. And I worked for really great vets and they were very kind to me with the hours that I worked so that I could be with the children. And I was so respectful for them and I just wanted to learn everything that they could teach me. And I did do the Sydney postgrad medicine and later on I did the surgery one just to try and catch up all the time. But, yeah, I just love watching other people work. I mean, I work for a guy in Yeppoon and I love watching him do surgery. Like it was like watching a show or something because he was so precise and so kind. And, yeah, I don't know, I just always felt that you could learn more stuff and there's other people that know stuff that I don't know. And oh, your lady the other day, Elizabeth, collecting horses. Oh, man, you know, that, yeah, we did that at uni and I thought, oh, I don't need to do that anymore.
That was me. I was like, that's one life-threatening thing I'm not keen to try again.
So I do find now as the practice owner, I really am happy to step back. I don't need to control everything. I learned to delegate. I learned to watch people and say, yep, you can do that. And in fact, you do that better than I do. Then, yeah, appreciate each other and appreciate what the other person brings. And one of our vets, and this is really cool, she went off on maternity leave and had a baby. And she loves the research. She loves looking stuff up and working cases right down to saving that animal, basically. So she's at home with the baby. Our vets at work are busy, consult, surgery, doing the stuff, phoning the people. And they'd come across a case and they just wanted like half an hour research done on it. So they phone her and she goes, yep, got that. And she'll memo them back and give them a bit of a story, a bit of different pathways to go. And they'd read that. They've got a nice little summary there that they can move forward on without having to pull out of the clinic. And that was her skill. She loved doing it. She's still doing it. Yeah, she's great.
You said also something you didn't particularly say, but you've said in stories. And as a leader of a practice or people, you know, a mentor, you've got to create these fail-safe opportunities for people. Like you kind of know inherently that things will go wrong and you can mitigate the risks. But did you learn that as like when you're out mustering and kids walking around, cattle and stuff, and like, eh, that's kind of safe, but not so safe, but it's, you know, they're not going to die. So I don't know, like how did you come to grips with that or realize that too?
I think that's probably from my parents, because I actually grew up at Kawarra, which is a little town just out of here, and we had a one teacher school, so it was a mile from home to school. So we used to ride our bikes, and then Dad bought us some ponies, so we'd ride our ponies to school. And you know, no shoes, no uniform, and certainly no helmets. So I had a couple of busters, and my brother had a buster, and that's okay. We healed, you know, we got back on and had another go and away we went. So I guess as a child, and honestly, we were just roaming around that country all the time with our bikes, and, you know, there was no Maccas, so you'd be finding fruit on the fruit trees and mushrooms and whatever. Like we'd take our fry pan and a bit of butter and some matches out and pick mushrooms and have a nice little picnic and go home. So we're allowed to do all that stuff, just have adventures. And I've already encouraged my children to have adventures. And I mean, they did pony club, show jumping and a little bit of eventing and a bit of dressage. So we had a F-250 truck and a gooseneck and away we'd go. And I'd actually have to sit on a cushion because I couldn't see out of the front windscreen. But anyway, and so there's the three of us traveling around in this with these two big horses, and things would go wrong, you know, we'd get a flat battery or a flat tire and you just kind of have to take a breath and go and fix it. So it just, life's like that, isn't it? Things happen and you've just got to take a breath and go, how can I deal with this? And you support your children and you support your people at work. And yeah, we've had unexpected deaths at work with animals and I make sure I'm there for them. I go and see them that night and talk to them and tell them we've all been there. It's okay. How can we readdress it? And at work, we've got our five rules. The first one is the intent is good. So we know every person in that clinic wants to do the right thing. That's why they want to look after those animals and save those animals. The other one is no blame policy. If something goes wrong, let's have a look at why it went wrong. Have I not taught you enough? Have I not walked you through that? Were you tired? Was the phone ringing at the time? What was happening? Did you not have enough time to do that? We need to address that. So we work through that as well. And what else do we have? No swearing policy, so things don't get...
That's a hard one.
I know, I've heard you too. We do now and then we just laugh each other or they go, oh, did Jocelyn hear that? And look around. That's funny. What else we got? No swearing, no blame policy, no disrespect. We have little training sessions where people are encouraged to call it out. Not call it out because they want to rouse at someone, but call it out because if someone's short with you, it might be because they're tired. It might be because they're deaf. I don't know. You know, they didn't hear you properly, so they snap back at you. I don't know. Maybe that's their personality. We need to work with that. But we need to talk about it and make people feel comfortable. We have these great little resolution forms. So if there's a bit of a spat, people have to fill in these forms about what happened, how it made them feel, and how we're going to resolve this. And then we sit together and resolve it. And we learn so much about that person, about, oh, that happened because this happened. in your family. Oh, okay, we can work with that. Oh, and the last one is just book it in, any animal, just book it in so that we can try and look after it, yeah.
I really like those. We fast forwarded to where we wanted to go here. We'll come back to a few other things, but we've got to dig into these the five rules. I love that. The first things I will say is I love that the call it out thing. I recorded the other day with Rhonda, a psychologist that we've had on here a couple of times, about compassion fatigue. And that is actually one of the strategies to combat compassion fatigue, is to call it out. She says, because the person who is on the road to compassion fatigue or often is quite unaware of it and will act out in certain ways that other people are often faster to pick up on, to go, well, you're not yourself. You're not normally a snappy. I almost said a swear word, but I'm not allowed to swear in front of us. and then calling it out, saying, hey, are you okay? Because you really are not yourself. You're not as kind as you normally are, or you snapped at me earlier. And that can actually catch them and make them reevaluate and go, yeah, or I'm not. Why? What is up? Why am I? Do I need a break? Or do I need, as you say, do I need the toilet or something like that?
Yeah.
And then how do you not enforce, that's the wrong word, reinforce or instill these five rules and practice them? You mentioned training sessions. How do you make sure, because it's very easy for management to have a leadership crew come in and say, yeah, you need to figure out your values and your rules and things like that. And then it's established and then never spoken about again. And it just remains in a folder on the shelf somewhere. How do you make it real?
Oh, yeah, we talk about it a lot. We have meetings nearly every week. So we have a nurse meeting and training 1 week, and then next week we'll have everybody meeting or meeting and training, and then we'll have a VITS meeting and training, and then sort of management with the clinical director, the practice manager and I. And during those, yep, it's spoken about. And those rules are my rules. And I just said, this is how it's going to be, being the mother and all. They worked out the five values that they want as well, which are a little bit different. But we'll often go, oh, look, this, we're going to make a decision here about how we're going to respond to this client, or how we're going to deal with this animal. How do they fit in with our values? And our values are empathy, professionalism, integrity, team and relationships. And Jamie's put that in a bit of a sentence and a little tree, and that is on our wall. So it's there. So when people come to having to make a decision, they can go, how does this fit with empathy and my relationship with this client, with the pet and with our clinic? And it helps us work through, rather than just going, oh, well, this is how it should be, and shortcutting it a bit and maybe not making such a good decision.
That's really powerful, because a lot of people create values, or they practices create values, but then they don't use those values as their guiding compass. But then what you just explained there is this kind of how to use the values.
Yeah.
How can we decide, or how can we use these? How is our decision based on these five values?
And sometimes I'll spring it on them in a meeting, say, okay, what's our five values? And and it was funny, one girl, she'd only been with us a month, and she just stood up and she just recited the whole thing, and all the others going, whoops, lift our game.
Like a drill sergeant. Yeah. Send them a text at 3 a.m. Values, reply.
Yeah.
Can I take you back, Jocelyn? You said earlier about when you started work again, more full-time vet work. So you said, how long did you do the mastering? Years, multiple.
Mm. 13 years.
Yeah. And then that shift back to coming back to vet work. So how old were the kids then? Are they high school then, kind of out your hair a little bit, or still very much a day-to-day thing?
They are 7 and 4.
Oh, tiny.
Little mites.
Yeah. Okay, so very much full-time work then in itself. That coming back to work, and you mentioned that feeling of going, I don't know anything. I mean, you get that feeling after a two-week holiday almost. Sometimes you feel a little bit slow. How did it? You don't sound like you had a lot of ego around it, which I think is really important. But how did you handle that? How did you not let it stop you from being brave enough to go back to work and saying, yeah, like I am. I do have the degree. I'm allowed to do this. I'm going to start doing it again.
Well, it's necessity, isn't it? You need to get a job. You need to look after your family. And I think the no vets, it started up in our regional and rural areas. Like the guys up here couldn't get vets. So I was extraordinarily lucky in that I could go in. Like they'd phone me up and ask me to come and do a locum, and I'd say, you know, I haven't spayed a cat for 10 years. And they go, that's all right, just come on in. Okay. So the first spay I did was on my own dog. And, it was tricky.
You got to back yourself for that one.
And it started bleeding. And anyway, we got through. And then I worked for another vet and he was very lovely. And at the interview, I took my four-year-old because what do you do with a four-year-old? My other one had just started school, the seven-year-old. So, you know, I trundled with the little one and that makes it quite clear that I had these other responsibilities. And he was a lovely family man. He was just great. And we negotiated some hours and it was casual. I just watched what everyone was doing and did whatever I could. And I can't even remember. Like the anaesthetics were much the same, I think. The spay, your surgery was much the same. I think they've changed a lot in the last 20 years that I've been practicing. But when I came back then, we were still using thio and stuff. And actually, I felt so blessed to be able to go and find a job that I loved and that I could become good at again. And, yeah, and people wanted me. Like, to feel wanted is really important for people and respected. Yeah, it was amazing.
A lot of vets would struggle then with this big imposter syndrome, right? They come back, they have this, they know and they feel this deficit in knowledge and, you know, it just plays in their head all the time, not good enough, not good enough. You said there in the end that something along the lines of like, I want to get good at this again. But what was the mindset, I suppose? What were your thoughts when you got back into practice? It was, you know, you felt overwhelmed, you know, this big gap between your knowledge and the knowledge you felt like you need to be at. You said necessity is a powerful driver for change and for people taking action. But what was it for you?
Thinking back, it was really hard. And I had just amazing support around me. Like I made a lot of friends. And the friends I made through work, they're really good and they help you through and they talk to you about stuff. And you look up every case you come across and just talk to people and try and find out how to do things. I think I had a lot to deal with anyway because, you know, going through a divorce, new career because everything I was doing before was the beef industry and now I had no beef industry. Like it had all gone. I was just this person in Rocky. So being a vet was really, really, really important because that's what I could do. That's who I was. And I was going to be really good at it because I was prepared to do the hard yards and learn and work. And when the kids were away, I just work all weekend, you know, whatever was there, I'd be there with the other vet. Yeah. Doing whatever I could to learn whatever I could, following him around. It was grand. Yeah. It's hard.
I'm going to jump in here for a second. I know you're loving Jocelyn, but I need to interject here to plug our clinical podcast. Because while they're all about learning and a very easy and convenient way of learning, they are really also about confidence. And like you're hearing from Jocelyn, that feeling of not good enough can be crippling. But instead of me going on about it, I'm going to read some extracts from a couple of emails we received in the last week or so from subscribers. The clinical series is hands down the best continuing education source I've come across for actually getting the stuff you want to know or didn't even know you wanted to know into your head. I've always struggled with motivation to pick up a textbook after work, and there is so much to learn that it's hard to know where to start. But your podcasts are so engaging, practical and interesting, with such good experts that I look forward to new episodes each week. Even though half of the info you end up forgetting, you know that you've listened to something on the topic, and it's so easy to pull up the show notes, especially now that they're on the Google Drive, and at least sound smart to the clients. So many times they've helped me out. But for sure recently, after literally finishing the series on GDVs on the drive to work that morning, the classic 5 p.m. Friday GDV came in. And although I'd only done one previously, which didn't go well, I found myself being the one who knew what to do. This one is still alive. And then the next email, that one made my day. And the next email, nice short one. I have to say that I'd fallen into a little bit of a stagnant funk. And the podcast has really re-sparked my passion to be the best vet that I can be and keep learning. Now, if that sounds like something that you can use, go and check it out at vvn.supercast.com to get out of that funk and be the one who knows what to do. There's also a free trial, so if you try it and you don't like it, just go ahead and cancel. I won't be offended, but I don't think you will. And then if you want to do a real deep dive for a couple of days while connecting with your fellow vets, come and join us in Noosa from 22 to 25 November. There's also a shorter option available if you're time limited, but it's our first ever Vet Vault live event with the Oracles of Small Animal Medicine, Professor Jill Madison and Professor David Church. Now, if you don't know who those two are and you've never seen them live, then you should hit pause and go and book right now. You really are missing out. The link for the conference is in the show description, wherever you're listening. We're having 2 days of really deep thinking and learning with these two, all about endocrinology and clinical reasoning. But it's very Vet Vault style, so lots of discussions, lots of questions, lots of cases. And then beyond the clinical stuff, we're also doing some serious unwinding. It is Noosa after all. So we are kayaking and we're hiking and we are hopefully surfing and tasting gin and eating ice cream and having beach days. And we also have an epic 4-hour session with Philip McKernan from episode 70. If you haven't listened to that one, do yourself a favor and go and listen. We're hosting this one in a small town movie theater in the countryside. We'd love to have you there. So go to that site that's in the show description. And when you book, use the code VVLISTENER. That's all capital letters at checkout to save $300 on the ticket price. Okay, back to Jocelyn. The scary thing, I can make it really personal. I was going to say I know of lots of mom vets and dads sometimes. Because of culture and tradition, it mostly is moms, but who are in that situation where they go, you know, maybe we're over the baby stage, but it's been a few years and I'm reluctant that necessity is not there. You know, maybe there is still another income. So it's not like you're going to starve or lose your home if you don't work. Just that hesitance is really, really strong. And I think there's a lot of people out there who go, should I work again? Oh. And then beyond that lack of confidence, there's also the practicalities. You still had those kids. You still had that 4-year-old. So now you've got to sort out daycare. There's the finances around it. That's often a big decision. You look at, okay, this is the cost of daycare. This is going to be my earnings. Doesn't add up. Doesn't really make sense for me to go to work. It's going to add stress to the family. I'm going to have a kid in daycare who's going to be sick all the time. It's not worth $45 or $50 an hour. I don't know. This is what you do now with your new business as well, is you help people like that. How do you think about this now? Or if you had to advise somebody around it, what do you say to all those very valid concerns?
Oh, I see. Give it a spin. I just love what I do. I could not be, there's six of us working there. We're all mums. We love our children. Absolutely. We spend a lot of time with our children, but we want to be more than the cook and bottle washer, you know. We've got the degree. We work very hard for that degree. We're very good at what we do. These girls are extraordinarily good. So, and I mean, they are at that stage. Well, when they came to me, some of them were at that stage. Do I come back into the profession? And you had those conversations with them. Do you want to? How can we make it so that you will love it again? How can we make it so that your confidence will come up, your upskilling, all that stuff? Because, you know, some of them have been a vet for 10 years and then they go out and have their babies. We want them back. We so want them back because the gifts that they bring are great. Even if they work one day, why not? That's great. One day of just being this amazing veterinarian and then you can do whatever you want the rest of the week. You can go skiing. I don't mind, but just have a great life. And if being a professional veterinarian is part of the life you want to have, go for it. We need to provide pathways for them to come back if that's what they would like to do.
So I suppose the first step for them would be to look at the way that they consider and identify themselves now as a, you know, dishwasher, food maker, home person kind of thing, to this is how I identify myself now, but how do I want to see myself or identify myself in the future, which could be a thriving veterinary professional with a thriving home life as well. So that first kind of flick of the switch in the head of the desire to want to be something different.
Some people just love and thrive being at home. It works really, really well. And I mean, to be a vet or have a career, it's not always clinical. There's so many mums out there who can step into, I met a lady who works with Royal Canin at the conference and they're running their own businesses, like wellness businesses, and there's so many different avenues. And that's where I think we in the clinical arena get a bit caught up because we're not moving, we're not changing, and these other businesses can provide different hours, work from home, all that sort of stuff, and maybe we're not providing it so much in the clinical sphere.
On that topic, it might be a slight little detour. Gee, we can dive deeper to the other stuff in a second. But I love that story that you told us about the vet who was at home doing some of the research, some of the reading. And was that a paid gig? Like, did she get paid for those hours? Oh, yeah. Or was that just because I've thought that for ages when I was back in busy GP practice. There's cases that you can theoretically manage, but you just need a bit of time to do a bit of reading and sit down. But then on a busy day and you've got five spays and another skin consult, so you don't get time to sit down and read about that DKA case or that really complicated. So then you send them off to a specialist center or often get stuck with feelings of guilt of going, well, I don't think that got the care that I could theoretically have given it, purely because of lack of time, not of lack of desire. And I've often thought having somebody like that, an offsite person to say, hey, because you can phone a specialist clinic, but they're just as busy. They're going to just drop everything to read about your case right now and then give you free advice. That's a cool thing. Do you still use that? Do you still have somebody offside who can help with? That's a great idea.
Yeah, because that vet's actually stepped up to clinical director, even though she does every second weekend, she does clinic because we share after hours with another clinic. And she does one short day, and I think she's stepping up to another short, longish day. So she's clinical director. So, yeah, we phone her and she organises, like, the veterinary stuff. We pay for everything. Every hour that they work for us, we pay for. If they come in for a meeting or a Zoom meeting, we pay for that. Why not? They're working for you. And after hours, we pay really well. Well, I think we pay really well and the girls are really happy with it. And we have a nurse on call as well, so that if the vet needs a nurse, that nurse knows that she's game on and can pop in there and work with them. And the client pays for all that. Like, they get the work done. They pay for it. It's fine. That's how business works, isn't it?
Okay, two things. One is what you said there is acknowledgement of time. As business owners, we quite often think that, we provide all these other things. You know, why can't they just turn up to this thing for free? Or, it's just 2 hours. And it's shifting the mindset towards, really, it is, I feel, is acknowledgement of everyone's time. But with your clinical director, like, did she discover that strength, or did you help her? Like, how do you help as a business owner help your team discover their strengths and then work together to leverage that to create alternative career opportunities?
I think just having conversations. You just sit down every now and then and you're having this conversation and you're saying, hey, you going at home? And you're, all right. And, we're a bit busy at work, and just evolves. You just have conversations with people, because I've watched this vet work for like two, three years. I know how amazing capable she is, and I know she's onto that research. She gets right down to the nitty-gritty of things, and I know she loved doing that, and we needed that done. Because the vets, with COVID, with everything, things just got a bit busy and a bit hairy, and they want to provide that extra care. They always want to do the best they can do. And our specialists are 9 hours away. Yeah. And we had one really sick dog and the roads were flooded and we couldn't even get her to them. So these things happen. You've got to have some strategies in place to look to the future and think, well, what could happen and how could we manage that? And here's this vet at home with all this talent. Why aren't we including her? And all through their maternity leave, they come into any trainings, any new equipment, come and see what we got. They just pop in, whatever. They're always welcome in so that they can catch up with us. And out of that, again, you get the conversations because you hear how they're going and you know what they can do. And you think, would you like to do this? And they go, oh, yeah. Or, oh, no, that's, baby's not settled yet. Can't do that yet. I'll think about it later.
What I would acknowledge you there then is it's, as you said, their talent, right? It's acknowledging their talent, right? And then also at the same time, it's flexibility. It's like the conversations you're having are around retaining talent to some degree. And everyone transitions, everyone gets to a point where, hey, look, I've done this enough and I'm going to try something different. And then a business owner can get caught within the confines of, what does a the standard veterinary career look like? What should a veterinarian do? And they had this stereotype of this, you know, role. This is the role that the vet plays. But it sounds like, for me, what you were saying is identifying talent, having conversations around talent and passion, and then being flexible to leverage that to some degree. Leverage is not a great word, but it really is. When you leverage it, you're giving someone the opportunity, and then you create opportunity as well. Is that what it is for you?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we can't get vets here in Rocky. Why wouldn't we do everything we could to work with the vets so that they can help us and fulfill their ambitions? And that's how I feel. There's probably a lot of talented women out there, veterinarians, who, if we had a way of bringing them back, had a way of connecting with their gift, whatever it is, they'd come and play a role in our veterinary profession. And it, yeah, why do we stick with this classic veterinarian, you know, with the long socks and the shorts and the, you know, I don't know how many times all my life people looked at me and go, oh, you don't look like a veterinarian. No, I don't. Not in the 80s. So I guess I've always been thinking, well, what are the different things we can do? Why do we have to stick to the same old, same old? I get bored pretty with that.
I'm so curious about these things, though, because, again, Gerardo talks about flexibility, and it's easy to be flexible in some things. But then there are other things around practice, and this is more thinking from a practice owner perspective, that are, or maybe they aren't, but they feel like they are less flexible. And there's a clash there because you have, as you said, we have this veterinary crisis. There are no vets. Everybody's shouting, where are all the vets? Probably a lot of them are sitting at home because of the situation. They're mums, they're talented, they want to work, but I can't work until 6, 7 at night because who's going to pick the kids up? What's going to happen when the kids are sick? I can't afford a nanny because my pay is shit. Sorry. Just
I got you sorted.
Or it makes no sense for me to work because my partner earns twice as much as me and somebody's going to take care of the kids. So all these things that we get stuck on, what are things that we perceive as inflexible that creates that clash between moms and workplaces, veterinary workplaces, that you think we as a profession are getting wrong that can potentially change? That's a big question. Sorry.
Okay. We'll start with the ads. They're so depressing. Full-time. Vet wanted full-time or part-time, you know. And, you know, full well, they want full-time. I do see a lot more ads coming out flexible and casual, so that's really nice. But superstar. Really? I'm at home nursing my baby. Like, I don't feel like a superstar at this moment in time. Just the wording of some of it is quite depressing. And you know, and also the experiences, and I talked to some vets when I was at the conference the other day and they were telling me about their experiences, and, of course, my girls as well, of just working like you're working. And next thing, you're working 38 hours and then you're working 40 hours and then it goes up to, oh, can you just stay and do this? Can you just, yeah. No, I can't. I have to be out of here. Like our mum who has to be out at 2:30 to pick up her children. She leaves at 2:30. She only does consults. She does not get involved in procedures or any surgeries. She does consults so that she can finish her consult and walk out that door when she needs to.
But that's a hard thing though. I like it because, again, that makes sense. But there's a couple of things. There's the practicality then of, but then what if that thing does walk through the door? And then even if it's practical, then the one who walks out the door feels guilty, because certainly the people I work with go, well, I feel like, I've heard people say, I feel really guilty because when I stick to those parameters that I have to stick to, then I feel like I'm ditching the rest of the team and they've got to pick up the slack. Is that a mindset?
Yeah, it's a mindset. You've done your job. You worked till that time. You've done your job. And we're going to do some time management training because sometimes, you know, things drag on a bit. People start having a chat, but no, she knows she has to be out of there and she works towards that. The other day I was there sort of filling in the afternoon and she did half the consult. There were two dogs. She did half the consult. She had to go. I did the other dog. It's okay. You know, why can't you share a consult? Like, it's two different dogs. We know the story. Another thing, we got to make it practical. Like, why not? Like, and if an emergency comes in, and this is something I write about, and emergency comes in, your nurses know what to do with that emergency. That vet can sit down and say, okay, I've got this emergency. Tell the people who are waiting, I just need to address this. They'll understand. They'll go, oh, cool, an emergency. You just say to your nurses, can you do this, this, and this, and this, and this for me? And, you know, they might be busy as well, but I'm sure they can take a bit of time out to just get that animal settled, like 20, 30 minutes, get the animal on fluids, do some bloods, whatever needs to be done, get it settled, your painkillers, and then that vet can finish a consults and go to it or deal with it and then finish a consults. Or the next vet that's on will be available to do some consults. But you have the conversation with the owners. Excuse me, we've had an emergency. Please understand that we have to deal with this before you can vaccinate your dog. And they love it. They think that's grand. And they can tell their friends about it. And I went to the vet and they had this emergency and there was blood everywhere. And the vets got there and the nurses were looking after it. You know, it's grand. Another thing that we're doing, and this was a surprise to me, the girls came to me and said, can we finish at 5 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock?
Ongoing as a permanent change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I went, whoa. how are we going to do that? And they said, well, we could stay late one night. Okay. So we're going to give that spin in, we'll start in August. And, you know, they're home with their family at 5 o'clock when the kids are just giving everyone heck. You know, they're unsettled. They're home from school. They've got, I don't know, homework stuff to do. That's the time that your family can kind of come together. And we're still available. We're still on call. We're still available to our clients.
That time of the day with kids, to me, that's a really good excuse not to be at home. Sorry, well, I'd love to be there. But
I'd love to be
there. Love to be at home, but it's, yeah, work finishes at 7. That's so cool. I don't know if you listened to the Philip McKernan episode, Jocelyn, the chat we had with him. And that this brings to mind that thing that he said to me about when I said, yeah, but we have to. And he said, no, you think you have to. As a practice, as a business, as a culture, as the way we run things, we think we have to do these things, but nobody says we have to. You don't have to be there till 7. You don't have to finish that whole consult yourself. You can actually tap out and say, hey, can you help me?
Yeah.
You said a couple things there, which I think frames the flexibility that you create within your practice. And it's the question, because the instant reaction is, oh, no, you know, or it can't fit because of, it won't work because of. And for me, that's, as a hospital director, when I was a hospital director, it was like that's the instant kind of the structures, this is the process, this is the procedure, this is the way the hospital runs. But then what you said there was, you said two things, and I think they're powerful questions. One is, why not? Why not? Like, why not give this a go? Why not? You know, it's like, because we often think that decisions are irreversible. We make a choice and we can't go back. And if it has to be 100% correct, and that's one of the big things that holds us back as a drag anchor in our career. We think that decisions are final, but you just roll with it after, and then you adjust and change. You be flexible with the outcome. But so one is, why not? And the second thing is, you said, how? How can we make this work? And I think that's probably the most powerful question there is, how, okay, so you want to stop at 5, well, how can we make this work? It's, I think the mindset you have is a kind of how, why not learning and flexible mindset. And I think that's contributed greatly to where you are.
And my partner, he's like no veterinary, no, like not even a dog, like no veterinary experience at all when we stepped in a buying high street. He's a hydrographer by profession, so good with numbers, that's good. You can do the pays and the number stuff. And he kept saying, why are you doing it like this? Why do you do consults in the morning and procedures in the middle and then consult? Why do you do it like that? And I guess that's where I've had to think about it, because I've had to have answers for him. Like, because that's how we've always done it. And he goes, well, can you do it differently? You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe.
And you think about that. Like, do we do all our spays at night when the babies are settled? I don't know. Why not?
So are there things that you guys do vastly differently that you found works? Not vastly, but that's just not the standard norm for GP practice? Or you're not allowed to share your secrets?
I don't think we veer too far off the normal. Our practice does consults, surgeries, you know, stuff. We try very hard to do really good work. we work very hard with our communication with clients and setting expectations. We do that very, very well. And connection with the clients all the way through. If their animal's in hospital, they'll be phoned up constantly, updated, videos sent, you know, all that stuff, particularly after hours, that will send a little video saying, oh, our mate's doing just fine. Everything's okay. Go to sleep. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It's vastly different from other clinics. Okay. I think it's just that embracing the part-time work, just embrace it. It's the future. Gig economy, you know, heaven knows. I've written stuff about, oh, well, what if we have, you say, oh, I've got five spays today. Who's in to do five spays? They do their five spays and go home. I can do five spays with my kids wherever. You don't have to do everything. And as Ian says to me, nobody does 24-hour consults. Like, they can come in and out. You just, yeah, do your bit and then leave. You don't have to be there 24/7. You've got backup. You've got your mate. You've got your other vet. They know exactly what's going on. You've filled in all your paperwork beautifully. You've had a quick text or conversation with them. They know the owners. They know our structure, so they know the owner knows what's going on, is informed, yeah.
Something you said earlier that I find was one of your five rules that I wonder, how does it not clash with what you're trying to achieve with the flexibility? For rule number five, just book it in. That could be a hard rule. I've worked in lots of places where that's the rule. But then you have, so on the one hand, we talk about, well, we've got to set boundaries with our clients. Otherwise, this is the pathway to vets leaving the profession, because you've got a busy day and then just book the next thing in. It's an overload thing. And there's the practice owner on the one hand saying, just book it in. And the poor vet saying, stop booking shit in. I'm dying. How does rule five not ruin this beautiful environment that you've created there?
Rule five just appeared because the nurses were sort of, you know, and vets trying to solve the problem over the phone instead of just booking it in. So it sort of came from that. But now, yeah, we're busy and we're going, okay, it's a vaccination. It does not have to be done today. You can book that in next week.
I gotcha. So and just book fine. It in doesn't mean now. It means
doesn't mean now. No. Triage it. Yeah. Yep. And we use EasyVet, and it's, everything's blocked. Like, there's lunches are blocked out, vet discharge times are blocked out, nurse discharge times, you know, everything's got its place so that you can look at your thing and know, okay, I've got space in there to pop some x-rays of that dog that I saw this morning. Or if I haven't, I'll see if the nurses can do it, or yeah, find a way. And it doesn't always work. That's okay too. By the end of the day, it's working. It's okay. Yeah.
Sounds like a great place to work in. To some,
I like it.
Would you? I was going to say I'd want to come and work there, but I don't know. Would you take a mail, or is it mum's only?
I know. We've got a student in there that's a male for kid. He's doing all right. Oh, he's just a school student, but yeah, it's
so it's not by design. Like, you don't have a preference to employ female vets or mums or female staff.
No. There's not a lot of male vets out there. That's another thing. Oh, we did have a vet student male come up, and he's a Rocky lad. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be interesting. Anyway, he was there for 2 weeks, I think, and he was the nicest, loveliest person you could ever meet. He was an absolute gem. Yeah, I would love him to come and work for us, but I think he wants to do a bit of cattle work and mixed. So, yeah, one day he'll come back to Smallies. That'll be nice.
They definitely remember those memorable experiences and the environments that they do prac work in, and that sets the it sets the bar. Every time they go somewhere, they get this bar. And it frames what a practice should be like, or what I liked about a practice. So the value that you delivered was amazing. But also, at the same time, if you deliver exceptional experience, then, yeah, if they do want to go back, then they know that this is a place where I want to go back to.
Well, so, a few of our vets are students that have done prac work with us, and they've come back to us, yeah.
And look, we have to be – I always am mindful about talking about women and mums, and it shouldn't be a differentiator. We shouldn't differentiate, but culture does, so that's why we talk about it. The reality is, it is traditionally the way it is. But I mean, that vet student that you had, male vet student, that might be the reason why he comes back, because he also would like flexibility to spend time with his family and do other stuff. And because there is that, on the flip side, there's that expectation, well, you're the breadwinner, so you can just do all those massive days and suck it up because that's just what middle-aged men do. I try and avoid that, but I do sometimes feel like people judge me for it.
Yeah, and they can't keep doing that. It's not. People burn out and suffer, and it's really tough. Like, why, you get one life. You've got to enjoy that life. If you want to be a workaholic and work all that time, that's fine and do it. But not everyone wants to do that. They do want to enjoy their life. And, go skiing. All our girls have been skiing recently, so it's in my head. But, spend time with your family. Go out. I mean, we live here. We can go to the islands in half an hour in the boat or out west, up north, anywhere. Like, you can travel around. And one of our vets got a camper van, so she and her husband, the baby, they just go every weekend, every second weekend, because she works for us, the other ones, and get out of here and go camping. So I think for the whole veterinary profession, I think re-looking at the work times and the workspaces would be a really good idea.
And just to add there, it's like for them to be able to do that requires two things. Is one, is for them to discover and get clear about what it is that they need or they want outside of their career, and then a workplace that has a progressive mindset where they allow, agility, flexibility, and maybe out of necessity you need that in order to retain. But it's a combination of the two, as opposed to the vet gets to a point where, generally they get clarity from a burnout period or something like that, some kind of necessity where they just gotten crashed and they're like, now I need to reevaluate. And if you match that vet with a practice where they don't have, where they have this rigid structure, it's because we do this, because we do this, then that vet obviously is going to leave. Whereas it sounds like the environment that you've created is one of collaboration and with mutual goals and outcomes. And how can we work together to do the things that we want to do?
Yeah. Well, the collaboration is really, really important within our clinic. And like, they do a tag team when they're on call. One will do Friday night. So I think I was going to write it up because it's ABC, Vet and D. And, two of us worked Friday and then another vet did Friday night. And then one of the Friday vets did Saturday morning and another vet did Saturday through to Sunday. And, someone else did Sunday night. And they just pass it on. I mean, who even says you have to be on call for three nights in a row because it's a weekend? You don't. You just don't. And they collaborate. I don't even interfere with that. I don't know what's going on. I just know someone's going to be there. Jamie, our practice manager, she'll know. But I just know that they've taken on that responsibility. They will look after the clinic. And when they go on holidays, she'll say, who's interested in these shifts? And they'll fill them. Two vets went on holiday recently, so I had to fill one or two, which is really cool. I loved it. I loved going back in and doing a bit of surgery. So it's collaboration. We work together. You got to work together. It's great. It's so much more fun.
Such a positive attitude. And maybe this is the upside of the whole recruitment crisis, where people will be forced to say, well, how can we do this differently? The old model's not working. What can we do that's going to be better? And maybe we'll solve two problems at once, because the old problem of burnout and attrition and people leaving, because again, the old system clearly didn't work for everyone. So maybe the baby of this crisis will be a sustainable career where everybody can find their niche in it instead of being forced to fit into the traditional role of what a vet looks like. You don't look like a vet because you're not at work and you're not burnt out and you don't look exhausted.
That's the one. It wasn't because I was female or anything.
You're smiling too much and you're laughing. Yeah. You're laughing too much.
Yeah. I just talking to one of our vets this morning, and she said, one of the vets brought in hula hoops. They're all at the back there seeing if they can do the most hula hoop things, whatever you do with hula hoops. So, that's how they spend their lunch hour. Good on them. And the sunshine. But I really think, just to throw it in there, I really think that all our professions and all our workplaces in the whole of Australia, whole of world, need to start addressing this issue. I just hear from my daughters and other professions, they don't know how they're going to cope, how they're going to manage it once they have a family. And they're highly, like you say, talented professional people who are doing an amazing job. So I think we all need to have a bit of a conversation and a look at it. Mm.
That's amazing. All righto. Unless you've got anything else, G, should we wrap up with our, you listen to podcasts, Jocelyn? It sounds like you do. You found us on a podcast.
I found you guys. Yeah. Well, one of our vets told me that. You, I think. And I love that grief one. And I think you said the lady's name before. That was
Rhonda.
Amazing. And you know how your vets will sometimes come to you, or not your vets, your staff, anyone, and to tell you about something, and you go, I would like you to listen to that podcast, or, you know, your grief one. This is the time you need to listen to this, because what you said and did was the right thing, and this will clarify it for you and help you understand more about it, and that you are right, you are good. It's 10 minutes to work, so I don't get a lot of time to listen. I don't drive as much as I used to when I was at West. I listen to a little bit about women's agenda, as you do. You probably don't, but I do. But books are my thing. I just love books. I love libraries. I love bookshops. And I just love reading books and books and books. And the ones that I love are The E-Myth Veterinarian. I think every practice owner should read that. And Simon Sinek, how great is he? Yeah, and I listen to his podcast. And Yuval Harari, he wrote Homus Deus. That just opened my mind to what's going on.
Sapiens was the first one. That was paradigm shifting in a lot of ways. Like, that changed the same author, but the book called Sapiens, just about humans, about what we are and how we think and how we operate and where we came from. Mm. A lot of those things you go, oh, wow. So, yeah, really cool book.
Mm. Yeah, the penny drops. Like, that's why that happens. Oh, that's why that happens. And that's what is probably going to happen.
And then the last question, you've got at a conference. I see you are speaking at a few conferences coming up.
Yeah.
One lesson to the veterinary new grads of the world. What's your one little bit of advice?
Oh, look, they're entering just the most fantastic, wonderful, wonderful career that you could have. But they got to look after themselves. Save the animals, fix the animals, prevent pain and disease, but not at a cost to you and your family. You got to have your barriers, not give too much. You know, you see people just give and give and give because they care so much about the animals. You can't save every animal in the world. It's not your responsibility. Everyone needs to take that responsibility. Don't take it on yourself, but do good work and you'll be fine.
Thank you so much. Mm. That's really cool. I like it. I love the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you,
Justin. Yes, thank you for joining us.